Welcome in, everybody. We are so glad to have you with us for another custom deep dive. And when I say you, I mean you, the learner specifically. We've got a wild one today.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really excited about this one. It's quite a departure from what you might expect.
It really is. So, to set the stage, we are looking at a fascinating set of logs. These are actual archived logs from an online role-playing campaign that ran back in 2001 to 2002.
Right. Moderated by Conrad Wong, who went by the handle Lynx, I believe.
Yep, Lynx. And yep. Maya Wasserman, who used the name Rowan. And what's so striking about this source material is that on the surface, it looks like a classic children's fantasy world, you know, magic, knights, winter courts.
Yeah, the typical genre trappings.
Exactly. But the narrative engine running underneath it, it is incredibly mature. I mean, it tackles themes like cultural displacement, prejudice, and deep political manipulation.
Which is really the core mission of our deep dive today. We want to unpack the anatomy of a cultural conflict that's basically disguised as a simple winter mystery.
Right, because the lessons about history and survival here apply just as much to the real world as they do to this fictional one.
Definitely. And I'd invite you, as we go through this, to keep a really critical eye on the shifting concept of the bad guy. Because what starts out as a straightforward monster hunt rapidly evolves into this profound moral dilemma.
Okay, let's unpack the setup. Our entry point into the story is this protagonist named Knight Redmayne. And she's a striking character. Towering woman, fiery red hair, sea green eyes.
But she's an outsider.
Yeah, crucially. She is not of the fey race that rules this continent. Redmayne is actually half sea giant and half fire giant from a place called Lyonnes.
And that outsider status is exactly why she gets summoned.
Right. She gets called in by this imposing figure, Lord Ecclesaire of December. He runs the winter court.
And we should probably touch on that aesthetic because it tells you a lot about him. The December Fae are, you know, they're the apex of winter. Harsh, unforgiving, predatory.
His castle is literally made of solid ice.
Yeah, solid ice. They rely on heavy furs and braziers just to not freeze to death inside. And Lord December himself, the logs describe him as having these sharp yellow predatory eyes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He just projects this inherent danger of a deep winter freeze.
Well, he's got a major problem that requires someone like Redmayne. Lord December tells her that prime fae adults are vanishing from his lands at dusk.
Just disappearing.
Just gone. And there's no blood, no signs of a struggle. Even his legendary tracker, a guy named Thomas the Explorer, went out looking for them and completely vanished.
But there's a detail here that really stands out.
The horses, yes. I was just about to say, the horses always return unharmed.
Which is the critical logistical clue.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if this were a hungry pack of wild beasts in the woods, they would eat the horses, right?
Of course. A horse is a massive source of protein for a predator.
Exactly. So by leaving the horses unharmed and only taking prime fae adults without spilling a drop of blood, I mean, that proves this isn't just hungry animals.
It demonstrates immense tactical discipline. It requires precision.
It really feels like a highly organized labor ring or like a targeted military extraction. They specifically want the Fae, and they want them alive.
Right. And Lord December's logic for using Redmayne is so cynical.
Oh, it's awful. Mm-hmm. Because of her giant heritage, she's as tall and formidable as a high-ranking Fae, so she looks like a tempting target. But because she isn't actually Fae,
she's totally expendable to him.
Exactly. She is literally imported bait. So she accepts the mission. She goes down to the local frontier town, meets with this completely weary headman, Jenrik Altsturm.
Poor guy is probably overwhelmed.
Oh, definitely. And to make herself the perfect trap, Redmayne goes to a local innkeeper to disguise herself. And she needs to hide that fiery red hair.
Right, because that stands out too much.
Yeah, so the innkeeper uses soot to dull her hair to a flat black and rubs this pale lotion on her skin. The goal is to make her look like an October Fae.
Which is actually a brilliant tactical choice on her part. In their seasonal caste system, the October Fae are the autumn transition. They're on a lower, more vulnerable social rung than the December elite.
Ah, so she looks like standard unprotected prey.
Exactly. It's the perfect disguise.
But
while the innkeeper is applying the soot, she drops this crucial piece of dialogue.
Yes. She blames the disappearances on the angry wilds.
Right.
She says the Fae have pushed civilization too far, you know, felling the ancient trees, killing the game, expanding their borders too aggressively.
It's an immune response.
Basically, the innkeeper literally says, a life for a life, child. Oldest laws in the wilds are all about survival.
And that right there is the first real clue. We're not dealing with some random monster in a cave hoarding treasure.
No.
We're dealing with environmental and cultural displacement. The Fey Empire's expansion has triggered a desperate backlash from whatever used to live in those woods.
And Redmayne is about to meet that backlash face to face. So she wanders out into the freezing woods at night, deliberately acting like a lost traveler. And the environment almost immediately weaponizes against her.
The Fey glamour, right?
Yeah. She hears phantom voices calling for help to lure her off the path. Huge clumps of snow spontaneously drop from the trees to disorient her and cover her tracks.
Those are classic sensory manipulation tactics.
But Redmayne is a seasoned knight, so she just ignores it. She waits until the physical threat reveals itself. And suddenly, she's ambushed by a massive wolf.
Just a wolf.
Well, here's the thing. It doesn't bite her. It just blocks the path. And when Redmayne draws her weapon, which is an iron sword, the wolf instantly shifts into a woman named Ertzabet.
We should pause on the iron sword for a second, because that's a huge deal in this world's magic system.
Right. Iron is toxic to Fey magic.
Exactly. Iron acts as an anchor to harsh, unyielding reality. It disrupts the mutable, shape-shifting nature of glamour. So by drawing an iron blade, Redmayne forcibly breaks the illusion.
She forces the creature to solidify.
Mm.
And that's when Ertzabet and her companion Sveta step out, and we get the big reveal. They aren't Fey.
No.
No, they're... They're the children of Ceridwen. They are an ancient race of wolf people who were the original indigenous inhabitants of this entire forest.
Before the Fae drove them out.
Exactly. So instead of the classic fantasy trope where heroes fight monsters, we're looking at, well, it's extreme gentrification.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. The original locals are literally pushed into the freezing wilderness to die out so the Fae can have their empire. But it begs the question, if the wolves hate the Fae so much, why are they taking them alive? Why not just kill them?
And what's fascinating here is that the answer plunges us into this deeply uncomfortable moral gray area.
Oh, it's horrific.
Right. So Sveta brings out this ancient artifact, a crescent moonstone called the Sigil of Memory. She uses blood magic to activate it and show Redmayne exactly what happens to the missing Fae.
And the vision shows that the Vils aren't eating them. They aren't enslaving them. They are forcibly assimilating them into their pack.
To keep their dying race alive.
Yeah, their bloodline is going extinct, so they capture the colonizers and physically, magically overwrite them to turn them into wolves.
It's an extreme, violent form of cultural preservation, and it's born from absolute desperation.
It's basically identity theft on a soul level.
Exactly. They are stealing the bodies of their oppressors to artificially inflate their own dying population.
And the vision specifically focuses on Thomas the Explorer, the guy who went missing earlier. And the way they describe this chase sequence is just breathtaking.
It really is.
Thomas is fleeing across this frozen lake, right? He's sprinting, the wolves are right behind him. And then he purposefully drops to his knees.
He slides across the ice.
Yeah. He slides so that this rope he's holding whips around a tree trunk on the shore, creating an anchor.
Which is brilliant, because heavy wolves have terrible traction on ice.
Right. They can't corner at that speed. Their claws are just scratching the ice, and all their combined weight breaks the surface. They crash right through into the freezing water.
So Thomas is one. He outsmarted them.
He's totally safe on the shore, but then he doesn't leave.
No.
He ties the rope around his own waist, dives into the freezing water, and saves every single one of those drowning wolves.
He saves his own pursuers.
Yes. He nearly freezes to death doing it. And what is his reward? The exhausted Thomas is immediately captured by the very pack he just rescued.
This raises an important question, though, because what happens next is brutal.
The transformation.
Right. They bring him to a stone circle. They lock a magical iron collar around his neck. And the logs describe this in visceral detail. Bones breaking, flesh shifting.
His spine arching as he's forced into the shape of a wolf. It is horrifying.
But Thomas is a master warrior. He has the skill to fight back, even in that vulnerable state.
But he doesn't. And this part left me in genuine awe. They are physically beating him in his wolf form, trying to break his human spirit so the wolf instincts take over, and he just takes it.
He refuses to fight back.
He just keeps communicating this one phrase to them telepathically. You are not my enemy. I am not yours.
That radical empathy.
It's unfathomable. Can you imagine having that level of moral conviction while your physical body is being overridden against your will? He's trying to break the cycle of violence by refusing to participate in it.
He's holding a mirror up to their cruelty. He knows they're desperate, but he's showing them that by doing this, they've become the monsters the Fae claim they are.
Exactly. So, armed with this horrific truth, Redmayne is led deeper into the woods. She goes to the ruined city of Abnehmenvolf.
To the ruined cathedral specifically.
Right. And surrounded by all these hostile wolves, she doesn't fight. She invokes diplomacy, the ancient covenant of the emissary.
And she uses her own tragic backstory as a warning.
She does. She drops the title of knight and reveals her true name, Murin Rudhain. She tells the wolf elders about her giant ancestors and how they waged endless wars against the Fae to reclaim their homeland.
But the giants lost.
They lost terribly. Redmayne tells them, look, my people had size, strength, power. We killed thousands of Fae, but the Fae have limitless numbers and entrenched magic. They will never abide a threat in their midst.
It's a stark geopolitical reality. She's saying, if you keep kidnapping their citizens, the Fae Empire will march in and wipe you off the face of the earth.
You cannot live like wolves if you must hide like prey. She begs them to release the captives and formally assimilate into Lord December's pack.
But the elders refuse.
Of course they do. They are too proud. So they lock Redmayne in a damp cell in the ruins. And who is in the cell with her?
Thomas.
Thomas, still trapped in his wolf form wearing that iron collar. And they manage to connect telepathically. And here's where it gets really interesting.
The ultimate political twist.
Yes. Thomas reveals that before he was captured, his scouts dug into the Winter Court's classified archives.
And what did they find?
They found out that the Fae's ability to shapeshift isn't some divine right. It was originally a gift from the wolves to the Winter Lords.
Generations ago. A gesture of peace.
Exactly. But the Winter Lords betrayed them. To keep the power exclusive. They drove the wolves out into the cold so no one else could have it.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it changes everything about Redmayne's mission. Lord December already knows the wolves aren't just wild monsters.
He knows exactly who they are. He knows why they are kidnapping people.
Because it's a false flag operation.
It is a textbook geopolitical false flag.
Yeah.
Lord December is deliberately letting his own people and expendable outsiders like Redmayne get taken. Just to justify wiping out the wolves entirely.
Without looking like the bad guy.
Right. If he just attacked them unprovoked, he'd look like the historical aggressor. So he starves them, waits for them to resort to violence, and then uses that violence as an excuse for war.
It's a brilliant sociopathic game of political consolidation. And both sides are trapped by their own stubbornness.
The wolves think they are fighting for survival, but their methods are horrific. And Lord December is just manufacturing a crisis.
And the true victims are the everyday Fae who get kidnapped and the dying wolf pack who are being manipulated into their own destruction.
It's an agonizing stalemate. Redmayne realizes in that cell that to save the innocent Fae from being transformed, she might have to destroy the magic keeping the wolves alive.
There's no clean choice. And Thomas's final request really drives that home.
Oh, that broke my heart.
He makes Redmayne promise that if the animal instincts finally wash away his human mind, she has to use her iron sword to kill him.
It just highlights the profound personal cost of these systemic conflicts. The individual caught in the gears of history is the one who gets crushed.
It completely strips away the romanticism of the fantasy genre.
It really does. Which brings me to a final provocative thought I want to leave you with. When we look at conflicts in our own real world, how often are we told a simple story of monsters in the woods?
Oh, constantly.
Right. But the reality is usually a tragedy of displaced people, historical betrayals, and leaders who are perfectly willing to let their own citizens suffer if it gives them a political excuse to destroy an enemy.
You really have to look for the Lord Decembers in modern history.
Exactly. When someone hands you a simple narrative about an enemy, that is the exact moment you need to start digging into the archives. Well, that is all the time we have today. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive, and happy learning.